Okay, so I'm going to talk about future pistachio improvement. I'm not going to talk about the cultivars that we've developed, which I talked about last year. And if you're interested in those cultivars, we have six of them now. You can go to the recording that was made last year, and I think it may still be there. So let me just start out by going through these quickly, and then we'll talk about a couple of them in detail. And I'll talk mostly about chilling. Insufficient chilling is going to be, I think, the big issue for pistachio probably within about 30 years or so. So we're going to need cultivars with lower chilling requirements. We have not done in the past any screening or work on insect resistance. We developed some protocols for screening for Botrysferia decidia, which is a problem in pistachio, and did some work on Alternaria as well. But the cultivars were not developed using disease resistance as a criteria. Future need for non-chemical control of fungal pathogens. This is an integrated pest management issue. And then new rootstocks with different genetic backgrounds. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And as several in the audience know, there are some problems with existing rootstocks. I think there's some opportunities in the future for that, and also developing additional germplasm resources. Now, I wanted to talk about winter chilling and the chilling requirements for pistachio. So there really hasn't been much research done on pistachio cultivars and their chilling. Louise Ferguson did some work in 2002, which suggests around 700 chill hours for Kerman. And this, by the way, is the Weinberger model, which I think for some of you who were at the talk yesterday on climate, on chilling, was the different models were described. And about 900 hours for Peters. And according to the Australasian Tree Crops book, 800 to 1,000 hours is a requirement for chilling in pistachio, and that's pretty much sort of the rubric that's been used in California, although we have had less. And so this is the chilling hours accumulated below 7 degrees, and some people use the model which stops that at 32 degrees, and so below 32 degrees you get de-chilling, and also some of the models now suggest that chilling, that if it gets really hot in the winter time, like above 60 degrees Fahrenheit or so, you can also get de-chilling, and we're going to run into more of that. Let me back up briefly. So now I want to talk the dynamic model, which I think was described yesterday, and this is a newer model using chill portions. And this is probably the most definitive work on pistachio chilling at this point. And this is from that paper on Sorora. Sorora is a relatively low chilling variety. But I wanted to point out here, this is using the standard chilling hour protocol. These are the years when they had uneven bud break, very uneven and uneven. Take a look at the chilling hours. So you were talking about around 600 chilling hours, and chill portions 55 to 60 degrees. All right. This is from some work that Catherine Pope did as part of her thesis work. And what I wanted to show, they were looking at chill portions and its effect on yield, and this was on Kerman, I believe. But I wanted to point out here, so around 57 chill units is sort of the threshold beyond which you start to get negative yield, and that's important. This is from Dr. Eric Elke Luling, and who did a lot of work, has been doing a lot of work on modeling chilling in the California Central Valley. And what I wanted to show here, this is the mean winter chill from 1950 to 2000, and these are the projections based on their models to what's going to happen in 2050. Now, we're now at 2017, so that's about 30 years away, that's about 700 chill hours. And so you get a 2100, we're talking about 400 to 500 chill hours. So this is a pretty big deal. The safe winter chill is actually lower than that. And this was what started me thinking about chilling. This was also by the same authors. Started me thinking about chilling was when they published this paper, and this was the one in PLOS One. And what I wanted to show you was by the way, this is the Central Valley of California. This area here is Kern County, and then this area in here is where most of the California pistachios are grown. And you will see that at the present time, we're still in the area of safe winter chilling, but here's 2041 to 2060. This is about 30 years from now, 500 to 600 hours. And if you recall from the previous graphic there, that's insufficient to have good winter chilling. And then, of course, as we go on later in the century, it gets worse. And this is the same sort of graphic using chill portions. And what you'll see again here is that you're talking about 50 chill portions. And if you recall from the previous slides, that would not be sufficient. Now, that's only part of the equation in the California Central Valley. The other part of the equation that's really important is the presence or absence of fog. Kern County in the Central Valley has lots of fog. And when I first came to Davis more than 30 years ago, there was a lot of fog in Davis. You know, I mean, you'd always count on at least 1 to 2 months of constant fog. Never got above 45 degrees Fahrenheit. Last 5 to 10 years, we've had great weather in Davis. A lot of the winter has been 60 to 65. I think a couple of years ago, we had one day of fog or something on that order. So this is a graphic showing you what's happened with fog. And you'll see again, 1981 to 2000, there's been a lot of fog. And this is 2001 to 2012, not much fog. And fog is really important for winter chilling in California, because if we don't have fog, we don't have winter chilling. So this started, Craig Carlson and I have been working on this breeding activities for 25 plus years or more. I finally convinced him that, geez, we really ought to start thinking about developing and testing materials that are going to be suitable in 30 years, because I personally believe that Kerman, which is the major variety in California, we probably won't be able to grow it effectively in 30 to 40 years. And that's a large percentage of our acreage. Golden Hills and the newer varieties have been very successful recently, and those are potentially lower chill varieties. So what we decided to do was to set up a plot in the Coachella Valley. This is at the Riverside Station, and we put that in this last year, and we budded this in July. It was rather hot, and there were lots of nasty flies. They have a fly problem, right? I don't understand the fly problem. The station manager told me, yeah, it could be a lot worse than what you see here, so that made us feel good. But this is an example of the chilling hour and unit accumulation for this Bell Ridge is in the southern San Joaquin Valley. This is Kern County. It's one of the part of the prime areas. And you'll see here that in the 2014 winter, we got about 700 hours. And what happened at that point was that Kerman and Peters were completely asynchronous. So Peters flowered about the time that Kerman finished. They had a terrible crop. I mean, it was really sort of a crop failure because the chilling was quite low. And this is a similar graphic. This, by the way, comes from our Simmons database, and you can actually access this stuff. It's pretty good. So this is what chilling hours look like in the thermal station, which is, I'm going to back up, is in the thermal station is at... is the Coachella Valley plot that we talked about. But what I wanted to show here is that the reason this was chosen was because our chilling runs between 400 and 600 hours, which is what we think that the rest of California will be look like in the future, so a good place to test. And really, the only place we could find in California that was really suitable as a field test site. Something else that is sort of interesting is, and this just came out, was released, Pitt's paper was released, I think, very, very... 1 month ago or something, and some of the work that these folks did, and this is the citation here, suggested California is going to get wetter instead of drier. And we've had 5 years of drought, but it could get wetter, and if it gets wetter, we're going to have some real disease problems that we don't at the present time, so there's probably going to be a need to test for increased resistance to Bottrisaria, Dothidia, Alternaria, Botrytis are the primary ones. Thamus Michaelides is doing some work on Botrysopheria. This is a real interesting graphic. I just throw this up here. It's a new database that's available, and if you'd like to take a look at it, you can use this to find the climatic data on any location in California. You just move on the chart, and it will show you historical trends and projected future trends for temperature and precipitation, that sort of thing. So I wanted to talk briefly about dormancy. This was part of this paper was mentioned yesterday. What I wanted to show is that bloom date and the dam genes, which have been cited as responsible for chilling, basically in a large part of the genome overlap. And so if you're breeding for bloom date, earlier bloom date, you're also breeding for lower chilling. Another paper, this was an apricot, and it shows that the correlation between endodormancy, ectodormancy, and bloom date, the correlations are very high, so you don't have to really go out and try to find the genes for all of these dormancy characteristics. You basically evaluate for bloom date, and you'll get somewhere. We can also look, this is some work we did a long, long time ago, on a couple thousand genotypes, and basically what I wanted to show here is that first leafing and flowering dates were pretty highly correlated, and I think high enough correlated that you could actually do selection at the seedling stage and potentially get somewhere as far as bloom. So a couple of comments on conventional versus non-conventional selection. So wide crosses are a good opportunity to develop more chilling resistant material, and also especially for disease resistance, I think is very important. Molecular markers are handy for single gene characteristics, but the quantitative characters, of which I think chilling is probably going to look more like that, may be more difficult to approach that way. You've heard a lot of talk about CRISPRs, and CRISPRs, they're good if you're looking for a single disease resistance gene and you want to incorporate it, and may be very useful in looking at incorporating genes from exotic germplasm. But there are some problems with it, and they're just outlined here. And I'm coming to the end here, so I'm going to try to whip along. So a couple of solutions, CRISPR solutions. If we're going to use CRISPRs, we need to have good sequence data, and I mean great sequence data. We have to have functional genes identified rather than QTLs, because you've got to go straight to the sequence to be able to incorporate it in an effective tissue culture system. The tissue culture systems for P. vera, which is edible pistachio, are available, and the Turkish groups have done a lot of work on this. Pistachio vera, you can get somatic embryogenesis and organogenesis pretty easily. Not so much for rootstocks. Rootstocks are more difficult. We spent some time on this, and P. vera is really easy to handle from a tissue culture point of view, but the other species less so. Couple of other comments. Conventional breeding, we need to shorten the cycle time. Mutation breeding may or may not be helpful, and in gene silencing, we don't have a lot of information on it in pistachio at this point. Rootstocks, our rootstock germplasm base is unbelievably narrow, probably almost as narrow as we have had for the leading cyan cultivar, which is Kerman. So areas for improvement, stress resistance, drought resistance or tolerance, salt tolerance. Pistachio is pretty salt tolerant already. It's a great crop that way. Better resistance for root disease and nematodes. And there are other sources of nematode resistance beyond the current rootstocks, which haven't necessarily been selected for nematode resistance. So just a couple comments on the Atlantic Integrima hybrids that are more cold tolerant than Integrima, which is one of the reasons they're being used. But if we had more cold-tolerant rootstocks from other cross-combinations or other species combinations, the area that we could grow pistachio in could be extended outside of California. I won't say that for California growers, but could be extended. And clonal rootstocks, won't talk in detail about that, but there are some unresolved issues in clonal rootstocks regarding soil and clone variation, disease issues, and that's it for me. And I think we're right on time. Okay, thanks.